Welcome back, everybody, to The Arrow. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And we are back with the core content. Long live the Queen. But before we get into that, just want to remind everybody to go follow us at our social media, at The Arrow Pod on Twitter and on Instagram. We post there. Sometimes we say funny things. Sometimes we even respond to messages and tweets. That's fun.
No, definitely. I truly enjoy the conversations. I feel like we're living in the second era of Avatar, with this uprising of fandom and new people discovering it. And
hell yeah,
it's such a great little community that's kind of being built up. And I hear so many more people like listening to it for the first time, and even some people starting their own podcast.
Yeah,
like that have just recently listened to it, and that's kind of just that like speaks volumes to Avatar and how it's such a great series that the fact that someone's like, I'm so passionate about something I just started watching, not something I grew up with, something I just started watching, that I want to make a fan page or I want to make my own podcast about this, and it's great.
Dude, it's almost like Tumblr 2.0, it feels like.
Pretty much.
Like, that's like straight up what it feels like. It feels like Tumblr 2.0 right now.
Yeah.
So much, like, just, like, hype for Avatar. Like, people who would, like, never have been caught dead watching a cartoon, you know, are out here, like, but have you seen Avatar? Like, talking, like, JoJo fans out here, you know? Like, they're, like, in droves.
So, yeah, breaking records on Netflix and stuff.
Yeah, it's so good. It's like, and it's about time everybody understands. Like people have always been like, what do you make your podcast about? And I'm like, oh, I make it about a kid's show that aired like 12 years ago. And they're like, oh, that's cool. And I'm like, you should watch it. And they're like, maybe I will. You know, and I'm like, I know you're like not sincere about that, but you really should watch it. Like, it's really, really freaking good.
Yeah, there's fan pages on, I mean, there's Discords created with that, like, are called the White Lotus, and there's like hundreds of people in there. There's a White Lotus like fan page on Facebook that I found, and it has like over 114,000 members. So like it's kind of outrageous at this point, and but it's just so cool to see all these people kind of appreciating it.
Yeah, I don't need to join any more Discord pages. I got plenty of Discord going on. So, but with all of that being said, let's get into it, Tony. We're talking about Long Live the Queen. Why don't you get us started here?
Long Live the Queen. So, it feels like it's forever. Okay, so last episode, Asami and Korra were captured. So they originally thought, well, Korra at least originally thought that it was Red Lotus that finally captured them. But it turns out it was the Earth Kingdom. So on behalf of the Queen, they were captured. As we saw earlier in that episode, they did have wanted posters up because, well, they took her quote unquote property, which were the Airbenders, Airbenders. So they were wanted criminals from the Earth Kingdom, and they were finally captured. So we catch up to them, and they're being transported on an airship. And then, like, Korra is, like pretty much muzzled, like, straitjacket, chained down, like, everything. And then they're kind of just, like, tying or, like, chaining Asami up to, like, this little rail.
Yeah. And then Asami is like, yo, can I, like, stand up instead? And he's like, no. And she's like, pretty please?
She's like, yeah, what's the difference? Like, it's on the rail right there.
And then he's like, okay, since you asked nicely.
Korra's like, can I get some water? It's like, no. Don't ask me for any fire or earth either.
Yo, that's the first thing I'm ever going to ask. If I'm ever, like, captured, I'll be like, yo, can you give me some fire, though? Yo, straight up, bring me the Olympic torch right now.
If you got it laying around, you know, some matches or something, I would appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, he's like, I mean, you have air. And I'm like, yeah, Korra, why don't you just, like, breathe really heavy and do something. But she doesn't. But that's okay. Because Asami's like, oh, yeah, you know these blimps that are, like, made by my competitor? They're pretty terrible.
Oh, yeah, Cabbage Corp blimps. Apparently, they're shoddy craftsmanship, apparently, that she was able to just, like, rip the middle rail off of the wall.
Just what do you expect from a cabbage? Straight up. That's Cabbage Corp for you.
Yep, low quality. Never buying that stuff.
And so, like, what ends up happening is that Asami ends up escaping and is like, yo, in five minutes, what you're going to do is you are going to call for help. And then that's all she says. And Korra's like, okay. And so then Korra does 5 minutes later, because we're just going to go through the through line here. Honestly, okay. Didn't it feel like Korra had, like, very much nothing to do in this episode?
Yeah, not really much to do here.
Yeah. So Asami kind of, like, sneaks up behind the guard once Korra comes, and then, like, once Korra screams.
Yeah.
And I was like, Asami comes up behind the guard once Korra comes. And I'm like, wait, no, that's not what happened. Once Korra comes up, Korra screams. Asami comes up behind the guard.
Yes.
And then knocks him out, and then unlocks the room, and then they
head up to the control room.
Yeah, but how did Korra get? Oh yeah, wait, because Asami got the keys.
Yeah, he had the keys. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Charisse was watching this with me, and she was like, "Isn't Korra like a metal bender?"
I mean, technically, yes, but she's like bound. Her arms are bound. Like, she's not proficient at it that she can just like manipulate it with like a twitch of a finger or something.
Yeah,
we've kind of seen that she really needs like big drastic movements to be able to manipulate metal, especially if it's like not meteorite. So I don't feel like it, being in a straight jacket would give her enough movement or control to do anything.
Yeah. Do you think right now, like, do you think that that scene where they broke into like the control room, did it feel reminiscent to any other scenes?
Breaking into a control room?
Yeah.
It's kind of like season finale.
Not the pirate, the pilot's room.
The pilot's room. It's like season finale of Avatar.
Yeah, it also kind of reminds me of like the Southern Raiders episode too.
Oh.
It's like both of those scenes kind of feel very similar.
Yeah, definitely.
Korra kind of like breaks in and they just kind of like take out the people steering them. It's like actually... Why is there so many scenes of people like steering ships and then getting taken out and there's like zero consequence for it? Like, this was the only time that there was ever a consequence for it.
Yeah, serious consequence. She just like air blasted like straight into the controls.
Yeah.
Destroyed everything.
Yeah. I thought it was really funny because when they come out and then Korra's like, we want to help you guys. We really care. And then the dude's like, no, you don't. You just knocked me out. Like, what?
Yeah, that was such a like weird transition throughout like their kind of like story arc where it's like, we're trying to escape, so we're knocking you out. We're like, you know, breaking out of being captured. Uh-huh. But then, like, immediately, it's like, oh well, let's work together and let's fix the ship together. Like, it just like flips so drastically.
Yeah.
And there's like no real like struggle with it other than that, like that one part where it's just like, no, like, why are you trying to help us now?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then there's like that very quick like. Yeah, no, like, we're not going to work with you. And then Asami's like, pretty please? And then they're like, okay. Like, that's... I feel like that's how this entire episode plays out. I guess this is the giant beast, too.
This giant sand dune just moving about kind of motivates people to, like, hey, let's get out of here at any cost.
If only Asami was there in the Earth Kingdom and was like, can you not kill the Earth Queen? And then Zinir's like, no. And then she's like, pretty please? I think that would have been pretty good. Yeah, so they actually like do all of this work. Like, it looks like they're working for hours to just like get the ship running. And they finally get the engine running. Immediately, like literally like seconds after they get the engine running, this giant monster. What is it?
I don't really know. They thought it was a spirit at first. It's not a spirit. It's like this fish sand thing. I'm not really sure.
All right, Henry, no, you're not Henry, you're Tony. I'm sorry, I'm tired today. It was a long day at work. I am so sorry.
Tell me about it.
Right. But okay, do you know what a Mongolian death worm is?
A Mongolian death worm?
Yeah.
You mean the thing from SpongeBob?
No, that's an Alaskan bullworm. That's an Alaskan
same thing, bullworm. Right?
Similar. Not gonna lie. Not gonna lie, similar.
No, I don't know.
Oh. Yeah, this thing reminded me of a Mongolian death. Yo, Google it.
Right now?
Yeah, right now.
Okay.
As long as your computer doesn't explode.
No, I just do it on my phone because my computer will explode.
Yo, so this is just a side tangent really quick, but I used to watch this show on Animal Planet.
Oh, my God. What the heck is this?
Oh, this thing, Tony. It's a...
Oh, my God.
It's rumored to exist. Why are you screaming? They're just pictures.
Ew.
Everybody at home, Google Mongolian death worm. This is not what that was, but it reminded
me. Yeah, not whatsoever.
But it reminded me of it.
But like it moves in the like underground and stuff. Well, just kind of like it, right?
Yeah. And so like in this like desert, I guess in Mongolia, there's like the rumor of this. It's like kind of like they're in Loch Ness Monster, kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm. And there's this like Mongolian death worm that also has like electrical currents and stuff like that. What was it called? What was the show called? Lost Tapes from Animal Planet. Did you ever watch that show?
I don't think so.
Did you ever watch Animal Planet, or were you like a normal kid?
No. Were you a normal kid? No, dude. Hell yeah, I watched Animal Planet.
Yeah, dude, I used to go to school and people would talk about MTV, and I'm like, y'all didn't see the new Lost Tapes or like that most recent, most extreme episode on Animal Planet? Like, what? Lost Tapes, I think it was called. This is the show. Yo, they should bring that to Netflix. Yo, wait, what's this service called? Philo? I'm about to get a Philo subscription just to rewatch this. But anyways, I'm only saying that it reminds me of the Mongolian death worm because it runs through the sand and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Essentially, it comes up and it destroys the ship in
just
one bite.
It takes a chunk out of it. It leaves the pilot, luckily. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they just get it up and running. They just do their test run. It floats in the air, and then we just see it just take a chomp straight from the middle and leave like bits and pieces of wreckage left for them to kind of just like fondle through, like try to make something of it.
Yeah, and so like the cool thing about this is that like the interesting thing about it is like they're like, oh no, we need to get out of here before that thing eats us, and Asami's like, we can make like a sand sailor, and mm-hmm. then the captain's like, no, and then his crew is like, pretty please. Tell me that's not what happens.
Yeah, pretty much.
See,
a lack of a better word, yes.
This is how comedy works. You got to set it up 12 minutes and 59 seconds in advance.
Yeah, pretty much, because the captain just wanted to wait, right? He's like, let's just wait, but just like, I don't think we have that much time.
Yeah,
like, did you see that thing? Like,
yeah, and so they all get to work. They start piling up scrap. Somehow make a very convincing looking sand sailor. Sand sailor. And they get going until the Alaskan bull Mongolian death comes and shows up and basically eats them. And that's the end of the episode, actually. They just get eaten.
That's the end of the series.
They just get eaten, dude. Like, I was just like, I don't know. I have a critique about this whole sequence up until Korra, like, reaches her destination.
Mm-hmm.
There was... I mean, I guess it wasn't really a Korra episode. It felt like way more like an Asami episode. Like, Asami was the one saving the day.
Yeah.
But can Asami save the day in, like, a meaningful way? Like, can they give her, like, a meaningful, save the day? You know, like...
Yeah.
Oh, Korra's stuck in the... Korra's probably better off in the desert than, like, in the clutches of the Earth Queen. Like... Like, it's not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I get you.
It was
a feeble attempt to kind of just show like, oh, like Asami can still do stuff and she is a valuable member of Team Avatar.
Yeah, and I think it does it really, really successfully. It just does it with like a very like I didn't remember this happened until today. Until I watched it today. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't feel... It didn't really feel worthwhile for the character of Asami.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, I guess, my gripe with it. So,
anyway. Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. Like, she still got him out of the desert, though.
No, she gets him out of the desert, and I think, like, given that that is the conflict that we are given. Mm-hmm. Oh, she does it like very well, like very well. Yeah. Like gets them out of the desert. Like it's just incredibly resourceful. And even gets like a nice witty line at the end when they get to the Misty Palms Oasis.
Oasis.
Right. Like I guess I should say they didn't actually get eaten. Korra fire bends them out.
Yeah, she like jet propulse like Mako style.
out of
the giant fish's like clutches, and they're like barely able to make it away.
Yeah, and so like they get to the Misty Palms Oasis, and then Asami does get a cool line. She looks at the sandbender, she's like, "Wanna buy a slightly used sandbender, sailor?" And I was like, "I don't know, that's good." Like I like the line. Like I like it's like it really, I feel like it encompasses her character, right? She's just kind of like, she's like, "I'm gonna do my best with a bad situation. I'm kind of funny. I'm also a businesswoman, so I'm always looking for like." Mm-hmm. Something like it feels like we really got a defined character of Asami here. I just wish that it was like a little bit more consequential to the story.
Yeah
if that makes definitely sense.
Do you remember the name of the Shirshu trainer?
June.
June. There's a theory that Asami is like her like distant like relative of some sort.
I mean, that would make sense.
Yeah, since like they're both from the Earth Kingdom, they look fairly similar. Mm-hmm. So I was like, huh, I believe it.
Yeah, I feel like there's like a lot, so many theories about like people being related to these people, mm-hmm. based off of just like their qualities.
Yeah, I mean it's fun to imagine.
It's fun. Like I know I like it. I just like have noticed that there's like. I feel like in Avatar more than anything, there's all of these theories about like every single character. Like it's like, oh, do we have a complete backstory for them? No. Well, this is obviously their backstory. Yes.
I will make the backstory like Sue being Sokka's child because she has like waterbending attire or waterbending-esque attire as like she has like the bands on her mm-hmm. arms and like little things here and there.
Ty Lee is 100%. A third generation descendant of the airbenders because she has white eyes and she's agile.
Yes, facts.
Facts. No, I mean,
I believe that one.
That one seems more plausible, especially because we know kind of like that they escaped into the various nations surrounding them mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Like that one does make a lot more sense. I think that there's just like, I've seen posts of like, this is every descendant of airbenders in the entire show. And I'm like, sometimes they just have different colored eyes for like no reason. Like that happens sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess technically, is Toph a descendant of the airbenders, or is Toph's is Sue's father a descendant of the airbenders?
What?
Cause like Opal is could also be Batar. I guess it also could be Batar.
That's true. Wait, that's true.
There's like a lot of points. There's like a lot of points of intervention there, I guess.
Yes.
I thought about it. I was like, wait. It would be cool if Toph was a descendant of the air. She has white eyes.
Facts. Facts.
100%.
Headcanon now.
100%.
Put it out on the internet, everyone.
Yeah, but yo, so let's talk about what happens once they get to the Misty Palms Oasis and there's actually consequential things happening to the story.
Oh, yeah. I forget. So Korra and Asami make it back. The ship captain is kind of just like, you know what? Like, you're good in my books. Whatever, like, beef you have with the queen, like I'm good with it. So they just let him go. But then they end up seeing, like, a dragon kind of parked, next to...
The hook. He has a hook for a hand.
Oh, he does. Yeah, that's why he always has his,
and
like, hands in his...
It's, like, zoomed in as if it was, like, a really important, like, oh, we're going to talk about this. It's like, no, he just has a hook for a hand.
Well, he always had his hands in his pockets, which was kind of like sus. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, oh, he has a hook. Cool. Bye.
Yeah. If Bolin was there, he would have like fawned over it, you know?
Yeah.
Whoa! You have a hook for a hand? Can I call you Sir Hookhand? Or whatever, you know, like. But yeah, so we see the dragon.
Oh, yeah. So they meet up with Lin, Zuko, and then Korra's dad. And they're able to kind of They find out that the Earth Queen has been taken out, which is something we've kind of passed over, but we will be talking about soon.
Yeah, and that's kind of... Oh, and then Tanrong doesn't know what the Red Lotus is. That's the other part.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so Kara kind of just like debriefs them on everything she's learned from Zaheer, because they don't know anything about this. Like, they've known about Zaheer and his group because they're the ones that took part in capturing them and imprisoning them and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them ever broke, so none of them ever said a single word about why they did these things, who they were, anything. So the first information that we've ever had was actually Korra finding out about this from Zaheer himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in fact, when Korra found out about this from Zaheer, like, she was like surprised to find out that, like, what's his name? Not Noatak. That's Amon. Tarlok. No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Unalak?
Unavatu. Yes, thank you. I'm like, wait, why do their names all sound the same right now?
They do.
I was like, Tanrog, Noatak, Unalak, wait, all of them, it's all bad. It's like, okay, anyways, Unalak was a part of the Red Lotus, and so there's like a lot that we don't know about the Red Lotus because they chose to stay in secret.
Mm-hmm.
Are there more members of the Red Lotus out there?
Who knows?
I feel like there's gotta be, right?
Yeah, there is.
Is there anything else that we really talk about here? I think we just, like, skip back.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the gist of Korra's stuff, and Korra and Asami's stuff.
Yeah, because we go to Red Lotus stuff that kind of diverges from Bolin and Mako's stuff, which can really, really be skipped over for the most part. Like, if you thought the Korra Asami stuff was sparse... Whew, let's talk about that Bolin Mako storyline really quick.
Yeah.
We don't actually have to. I just want to start off. I thought it was really funny when Bolin was making friends with Gazan.
Yeah.
I like them. Gazan feels like he's like a he's like an older, like, hardened Bolin. Like, he used to be. Like, he used to be Bolin, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he used to be Bolin, and now he, like, and then he's like, he's seen war, and he's like killed people. So he's like, he's no longer Bolin. He's Gazan. Yeah. You know what I mean? He killed someone, so he had to get a bunch of tattoos.
Pretty much. But yeah, Bolin kind of questions him. It's like, what did you do for all that time? And then he's like, oh, it's like, Gazan's like, oh, like, I renamed the constellations like 1,000 times, and it was very eventful when it rained. And then, what's her name? I forget.
Minghua.
Minghua is like, oh, like, I wish it could have got rain, like, I was in the volcano, and I would just, like, make up stories about the guards, like, about their relationships. One wanted to be a pastry chef, and it's just, like, so, like, I don't know, out of character for, like, these hardened criminals that we kind of think about.
Yeah.
But it's insane. Like, I couldn't imagine what I would do, like, if I was in prison for that long, like, almost completely solitary confinement, because, like, as far as you, like, you just had some interaction with guards, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And even the interactions you have with guards, they're telling you to shut up.
Yeah, pretty much. They're giving you, like,
yeah,
giving you, like, food, and it's about it. Like,
yeah. The other kind of funny thing was, he said, what did he say? Or, like, Bolin was like, yo, I want to do that to you guys. What were the three things he said? I know he said, like, you two have some secret chemistry going on.
Yeah, that was the last one. He said...
You grew a mustache when you were 10.
Yeah, your mustache came in when you were 10. You were raised by your older sister. And I'm sensing some, like, secret or chemistry or something, unspoken chemistry between you two.
Yeah.
And he's like, 2 out of 3 is pretty good.
Yeah. Tony, my question to you is, where's the lie?
Where's the lie?
Two truths and a lie. Which one's the lie?
I believe his sister did not raise him.
That's what I was going to say, actually. I was going to say his sister didn't raise him. He definitely looks like he had a mustache at 10 years old. Yeah,
easy. We'll never know.
Easy. That was funny. But they get to Ba Sing Se, and then the Red Lotus actually present Bolin and Mako to the Earth Queen. And say, like, here's your prisoners. if you give us the avatar, we'll tell you where the airbenders are. And then she says, why would I do that? And then Zaheer's like, pretty please.
Oh my gosh, Chen.
Dude, I'm on fire today. I'm on fire today. No, actually, it was another like 12 minutes and 50 something seconds before I said it again. But no, what actually happened was that Zaheer said, like, yeah, if you like take the Avatar captive, like the other nations are gonna come down on you with like the full force of their own Avatar with like all of their nation's armies and stuff like that. So if you give her to us, nobody even knows that she was here, and she's not gonna bother you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, what do you mean? He's like, you don't need to worry about it because she's not going to bother you anymore.
Yeah, she's like, what are you going to do with her? And it's like, we'll just make sure she never bothers you again. So he's still not really seeing like what exactly their plan is for Korra, because their original plan seemed to be to train her, you know, as a part of the Red Lotus, be there her elemental masters and open the spirit portals. But now it's just like, what are you going to do with her?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. And I think that the Earth Queen is just like, I mean, it makes sense. So yeah, take her. I'll go wait over there in that nice little cushy room. I'll come get you when they're ready. I'll come get you when the hot dogs are hot off of the Barbie, you know. So that's what they do. They go and they wait. Meanwhile, I think Zaheer, either he noticed a Dai Li agent walking past them multiple times, or...
No, he was like, he looks like he's in a hurry, because like the Dai Li agent walked by their room, but he was like speed walking, like super fast. So he's like, oh, like wait here. So he's able to sneak up on a Dai Li agent, which is pretty cool. And they're slipping. They're constantly slipping now. They're not what they used to be.
Yeah, dude.
And he's able to sneak into the throne room again. And then overhear their conversation, and he finds out that they technically don't have like Korra captive anymore. She's stuck in the desert. So they're sending another airship to her, but he believes like she's not gonna be there by the time, you know, another ship comes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they gotta change plans.
Mm-hmm. And so actually, in fact, what ends up happening is that the Red Lotus decide to just like mosey on into the throne room, and they're like promptly surrounded by Dai Li agents, right? They get surrounded by Dai Li agents. The queen's like, you like leave, tell me where the airbenders are right now.
Yeah. Or I'm gonna throw you into jail.
Yeah. And then Zaheer's like, no, you're not. And she's like, you're not going to attack a queen. Oh, he called that bluff. Yeah, so I remember watching this episode for the first time. This it didn't hit nearly as hard this time. Because I think you get this idea, you're like, okay, well, I'm watching Avatar. You know, this is still a kid's show.
This is still Nickelodeon.
You know, like, season two happened, so, like, everything that... like, the stuff that happened at the end of season one that was like, oh... this is a different show. Like, they kind of, like, backtracked on a lot of that in season two. Like, it didn't really feel a lot more mature for the most part, you know? And so season three hits, and, like, we've taken, what is this, episode 10 of the season?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
10, yes.
Yeah, it's, like, 10 episodes before we get, like, a whole lot of real action. I mean, we get some action here and there, but, like, not a whole lot. And so you're just like, okay, like, he's going to just take her as a captive, right? And then she's like, you're not going to attack me. And then he literally bends the air out of her lungs.
Yeah. And like, you see her, like, eyes, like, popping bulging, out. Yes. Like,
he forms a vacuum. He forms a vacuum around her head with the air from her lungs and gives her this speech about how the freedom that she has divulged from her subjects is just as precious as the air that she breathes, and then promptly takes that air away as she suffocates to death. We don't actually get to see her die on screen, but like,
Well, pretty much.
She falls over. Like, we see her hand fall over.
Oh my god! Yeah, that was.
They were really like, okay, we if we want to kill her, we can't kill her directly on screen, but we want to make this less ambiguous than Jet. So, make her hand fall. Dude, I remember seeing that for the first time, and I was like, holy crap, dude! Like, this is a different show. This is a
show. How the heck are you? I had to check if this was. I just check if this was still Nickelodeon. I was like, what? What's going on?
Yeah. Like, not only are we, like, not only...
Some Toonami stuff?
Dude, it was crazy. It's like, not only are people getting killed in this show, we had someone die of, like, essentially, like, a suicide bombing, season one. Like, they, like, killed themselves in, as, like, bombing themselves.
Oh.
Yeah, like, Tarlok and Noatak.
Mm-hmm.
Not Tarlok. Tarlok, yes. Yes. The two brothers from the Northern Water Tribe.
The two bloodbenders.
Yeah. this season it's like, oh, not only are we going to commit regicide, like we're going to kill the queen, we're going to have terrorists kill the queen.
Yeah. It was just like a huge, like you mentioned, like, leading up, like the last couple episodes leading up, like it wasn't a super mature type of thing. It did, I did feel like, I mean, they were leaning like as Korra growing up and becoming like a more mature avatar. So that in that direction, they were kind of developing it a little bit, but not in like the context of like serious, I don't know, content in like violent or anything like that we were kind of seeing. So, like, this kind of just, like, full throttle into that. And it was like, oh, my God. Like, they're doing this. Like, after this, I'm like, anything's possible. What else are they going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, essentially, what ends up happening is that, everybody in the Earth Kingdom, you see, like, Bolin and Mako's family, like, hearing that the Earth Queen had been, like, taken out. Zaheer, like, makes a huge announcement on the intercom and is like, y'all are free. Like, you don't have to live under anyone's rules ever again. And then you see that's like awesome scene of Gazan just like lava bending the walls of Ba Sing Se open.
The inner wall. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Interesting fact. Something that I've always thought or assumed was that lava bending was like a particular skill that almost had to do with hereditary factors. Like, people assume that if you could lava bend, then that you had like someone in your family tree was an earthbender as well as a firebender. And that's why you can have this like special skill like Gazan has.
Mm-hmm.
I read that someone was like, I think it's just a skill that anyone can acquire over a massive amounts of training, because just like water, you're just changing the temperature to make it into steam versus ice.
Mm-hmm.
So with a lava bending, you're essentially just changing the temperature of the earth that you're bending to superheat it into lava. And I'm like, oh, that actually makes sense.
Yeah. I've always thought of it, I never thought it was hereditary. I actually thought it was just like the earthbender applies a lot of pressure to the earth that they're bending until it becomes lava, which I guess is like pressure and heat in terms of like, I'm not going to speak out of my butt here. I think that pressure and heat are in some ways like kind of synonymous when it comes to like physics in that sense, right? Like the more pressure you have, the more energy you have in a smaller area, which creates more heat. So they are kind of synonymous in that sense. So I guess like both theories are kind of true. it's I think lava bending cooler than metal bending.
I mean, it's just so destructive. Like, it's not as precise. That's the thing.
Mm-mm.
Like, as we see Gazan, especially in the next episode, which was one of my favorites, we really see his bending style with lava in particular. It's very just, like, thrashing and chaotic. Mm-hmm. There's not really much for control. So, I mean, in that sense, like, it visually it looks really cool. It's very destructive. But versus Metal Bending, it's like so precise in like the movements that you can make and the things that you can do. I mean, I feel like we've barely started seeing the potential of what we can do with real metal bending.
Well, even if you think about like the Red Lotus and like who they are and what they represent, right? Like I feel like in a sense you get these two members of the Red Lotus who feel like they've got such control over their skill to a point of complete order that they can just kind of destroy anything, and that's Minghua and Pili, right? Like Minghua and Pili, like Pili's like a literal definition of her bending is like this super hyper focused power that becomes this incredible destructive force. Minghua being able to just do all of this water bending without arms, and just like because it has to be so focused, it is so destructive. It has to be. She has to be that strong to even do it, so it's automatically destructive. And then you get Gazan and Zaheer, who, in my opinion, have this very, like, I wouldn't say controlled, but this, like, restrained use of this very raw destructive power that they kind of carry. Yeah. You see Zaheer does not see himself as an airbender in the same vein as everybody else, right? Like, he sees his power as a power, if that makes sense, right? Like, I don't think that's something that a lot of airbenders that we get to meet think about. So there's that, as well as Gazan, just kind of like this, like, you turn something into lava, like, you turn the floor, like, the floor is literally lava. That is terrifying. And the Red Lotus, like, supposed to represent, like, the only order is chaos, and you've got this kind of 50-50 kind of order and chaos-oriented kind of bending style. I think that's, like, really kind of cool. I think thematically, as they represent, I think also, like, metal bending is, like, if they made Gazan, like, an earthbender that could also metal bend, I think that's just, like, way too refined of a skill. That's, like, that's a skill that follows so many rules. Whereas, like, lava bending, if your main goal is chaos, you know, lava bending doesn't really have to follow the rules because you're just like, well, I don't care what gets hurt here. You know, if it got hurt, it was in the wrong spot. Get out of the way. You know,
that's why I've always described myself as a earthbender. That would be like my sub bending would be lava. Like, I don't feel like I have that refined technique that like metal bending requires. That I feel like that like random, like chaotic, destructive manner of lava bending kind of fits me way better.
Yeah. Well, I think that, like, I think two episodes from now comes one of my favorite scenes in the season, which I don't believe it's next episode. I think it's two episodes from now.
It's two episodes from now.
You already know the scene I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's two episodes from now. And I think that scene is also going to illustrate how the Red Lotus just leans into letting the natural order of, like, just like letting the natural order of nature just like take its course and just like does what they do from there. So stay tuned for that. But did we finish? Oh yeah. Zaheer also, he also like let everybody out of prison except for Bolin, who still cannot metal bend.
and then,
was the wall behind him?
He does let them. No, it was metal.
Are you sure?
Yes. When they fall back because of Zaheer's air blast, you see that it's like, it's metal.
Okay.
It doesn't look like it. That's what I was. That was something that I wanted to point out. Mm-hmm. That was like, dude, just
earthbend
the like, the wall behind you. Like,
yeah,
duh. But no, like when they fall over, you see like the grid type of thing that it's actually metal in the back.
Okay.
He does let them out eventually.
Yeah.
Because he tells them like, I have a message for the Avatar. Yeah. And like,
tell Korra, tell this to Korra, and we don't know what he actually says yet.
Yeah.
So, I really enjoyed half of this episode, and even the half that I didn't really enjoy, I was still entertained by. So I think for this episode, I want to give it like a 6.5.
Yeah, I would say a 6.5.
Yeah, like it's not one of the best episodes out there, but I still think I think that this season, there haven't really been episodes that feel just like a complete waste. No, there was that original Airbenders episode. That one was kind of a throwaway. this episode felt more consequential than that episode for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the whole Asami Koro thing, I did have like a bit of a problem with it, like you were mentioning. But Zaheer, again, my boy Zaheer, he saved the day, saved the episode. Some crazy stuff going down. I'm just like jaw dropped, like, oh my God, he actually did that.
Yeah, he actually did that. And I'm like, Zuko, you need to get out of there now. Like, I know Zuko's not the Fire Lord anymore.
Mm-hmm.
His granddaughter is the Fire Lord now.
Yes.
Or the Fire Lady, the Fire.
Or no, isn't it his daughter?
Is it his daughter or is it his granddaughter?
I think it's his daughter.
And then Iroh is his grandson.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
Okay, and his daughter's name is Izumi. So Izumi's son is Iroh, correct?
Yes, I believe so.
Did Zuko only have one kid?
As far as I know, yeah.
I think that the family tree says Zuko has one kid, which is Izumi, so. Okay. Man. What about Azula? Anyways, that's all I have for today.
Yeah.
What's next? Next week is, I don't know what the title of the episode is next week, but I'm excited for it. No, it's not Enter the Void next week. Enter the Void is the following week.
It's something.
Something good. No, I remember...
I forget. I really like it, though.
No, I think that like this season has already been really good. And at the same time, the last three episodes carry it too. At the same time, like
mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. It goes full, like right here. It goes full throttle, and then it just kind of keeps going.
But I think it like I just think that the structure of it worked so much better. Mm-hmm. Like it actually feels like there is mysteries to unearth. Like we still don't actually know what their plan is, right?
Yeah.
They couldn't convert Korra when she was young. Are they going to kill Korra? Are they going to hypnotize Korra? Are they going to suspend Korra in the Avatar state so that she can't? Like, what are they going to do? You know, like there's, I mean, I know what they're going to do, but like, but like at the time I was like, there's all these theories about what's going to happen. And are they going to just extract Rava from her again?
And they're all going to become the Avatar.
And they're all going to become the Avatar. No, like it just like to me, it makes sense that like you hold all of this back and just give us banger after banger after banger in the next mm-hmm. few weeks. And I like that structure. And I think even like comparing this to season four, I think that season four episode wise, like I don't think that season four is as strong as a season, even though mm-hmm. I feel like episode for episode, season four is stronger than season three. But I think that the structure of season three holds it up so much better than season four does, even though season four is also really good.
I just like season three.
I mean, there's a lot to like about season three. It's my favorite season, even though back in college when I rewatched seasons three and four, I went back and I was like, wait, is season four better? And I determined no, but only because of the structure. I actually think that episode mm-hmm. by episode, season four kind of holds up a little bit stronger than season three does. Like if you hold it up,
we'll have episode to find out when we watch it again.
Yeah, no, because I think that like even like think about our ratings for these episodes so far. We've given a couple of eights and nines, but mostly like 6.5, 7s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I remember season four being like, oh, that's an 8, that's a 9, that's a 7, that's an 8, that's an 8, that's an 8, that's a 9, that's a 7, that's a 10, that's an 8, that's a 7, that's a 10. Like
I've never rated them, so I wouldn't know.
Do
you do this often without the podcast?
Tony, you know I love to rate things. The only reason why we rate these episodes is because I love to rate things. You know this about me. This is like literally a character trait, you know? What are you talking about? Yeah. No, I really have enjoyed this though this season so far, and I'm just really excited for the next few weeks, so stay tuned with us, everybody.
All right,
I guess we're done.
Yeah, that's it.
My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
We'll catch you all next time. Bye
bye.